Holy fuck, it's Friday!
It's all about the pandemics, baby.
Hello, and welcome to the Tech Podcast nobody asked for, but everyone loves, and it's called Two and a Half Bens. I'm Phoneboy.
I'm Phoenix.
I am Sir Ryan Pemrose.
There you go. And so, you know.
Oh my God, could he sound more unfucking impressed by the fact, I'm Sir Ryan Pemrose. God damn it, I gotta be here.
Yes.
I tell you what I'm not impressed by is the fucking news today.
Oh my God.
As much as I try, you know, I'm pretty much very opinionated about two topics, technology and news. And, you know, I used to do a podcast where I combined the two and it became popular until I realized that it sucked. But I mostly on this one try to stick just to the tech side. I'm not going to be able to.
Oh, come on. We expect nothing less. Like, come on. With what's going on in the world right now, do you really expect that we can...
Tech and politics are just the two things. They're two great tastes that go shitty together.
Well, most of the inshittification that occurs in tech is because of politics, but anyway, that's
quite a lot, yes.
So, we'll definitely get there.
No, you're going to sit the fuck down and let Sir Bemrose talk about what he was about to talk about, because he was about to get into something interesting about why the news made him mad. Sit, Ubu, sit.
Well, that's the next 2 hours. I was going to let Phoneboy go through the intro first.
Well, yeah, fair enough. I was going to do the intro. Yeah. So we try to do this every other week, but it's, you know, because life happens, we're doing it periodically in any case. And it's Fridays live at 9 Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on 2.5bens.live if you want to come,
And today is Friday the 13th.
And today is Friday the 13th.
Oh
yes.
My gosh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Of course, you can listen later on 2.5bens.com or on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, some blah, blah podcasts. If you want to send this email, feedback at 2.5bens.com. You can leave a vocal mail or send a text to some idiots at the Lotus Effect at 253-237-3321.
Oh, my God. Please tell me that we can make some idiots at the Lotus Effect a actual email. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I could do that. So...
It's much like how some fucking list was created.
If you've got default forward set up, then that already works, and people should be sending to that address.
Yeah,
I think that's brilliant.
Exactly. So I think we have to tell. I think we have to. We were have to.
That's right. We were waiting until we were on air to tell the story.
Yes, exactly. So this is where we do that, and then we can go pontificate on the shittiness of this tech and maybe politics. But this was we were talking about attitude problems in IT. I don't even remember the content. I mean, we were in the green room having a.
Yes. I know what it was. I was having one of those emotional moments that we women have, especially when dealing with, you know,
every 3 minutes
trauma. Nobody fucking asked you, Sir Bemrose. Like I said, don't make me sick the name on you. So you had said something that was kind of just really cutting and crass, because you do. You're a guy, and
which one of us said something? I mean, I do that.
Phoneboy
did.
It was me.
Oh. It was Phoneboy.
Because I know I did, too. I was just really concerned that you heard me.
Why am I not surprised? But no, we were in the green room and I told him, I said, you know, it's a good thing you decided to go into IT instead of being a doctor because you've got a shitty bedside manner. He said most IT people do. They've got anger issues. And my immediate comeback was, yes, Exhibit A, Sir Ryan Bemrose.
Anger issues, is it really an anger issue, though, if it is absolutely legitimate? It is brought on by the shit you have to work with. Because IT people have two inputs.
Just like, this is fucked.
IT people have two inputs. Bullshit things that computers do and bullshit things that people who don't know anything about computers do.
That's fair.
Yes. And sometimes it's hard not to be surly. And you go... How do you dress yourself in the morning?
I look at people like that all the time.
Well, yeah, you're especially doing rideshare.
Okay, no, you're going to make me tell this story. So this is why I asked the shorts question to Sir Vemrose, because there was a passenger who was complaining about the fact that it was cold. And she was like, you know, I just wanted to dress all cute and everything. Okay, you got a good looking body, but a butt of face. She looked like a fucking pug. She looked like somebody smacked her with a bag of nickels. Are you trying to look all cute? Honey, that ship has sailed.
I mean, okay, as a guy, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. When you have somebody like that, really good body, bad face, as a guy, you just don't look at the face. The only people who look at the face like that are other women.
Okay, and there's a reason why years ago the term, it's not the face you fuck, came to light.
Well, that's also why, that's also the song, You're Pretty When I'm Drunk.
I mean, there is that.
Yeah, so there is that. So, yeah, anyway, did we have any other anecdotes we wanted to tell before we get into the ranty text?
No, here? I absolutely am waiting with bated breath to hear Sir Bemrose's tech slash politics rant.
I mean, if you want small talk, I could tell you it's not sunny, bitch.
No, it's not.
Water's wet, bitch.
Yeah, well.
You live in the P&W.
Yeah, the P&W is wet, bitch.
Exactly.
You heard the one about the person from Seattle who goes to hell and devil, instead of throwing him down in the pits of hell, he just throws him off to the side. He's like, what are you doing there? He's like, no, he's too wet to burn.
Yeah, pretty much. Jeez.
That's terrible.
Okay. You know what? I'll just start from the top of my notes file and go down. But let me tell you, it starts out weak and has a very strong finish. So I'm going to leave you in suspense intentionally because fuck you. That's why. This one started from the source is actually a post on Mastodon. I was not able to find a webpage. I don't believe it was put up to a webpage, but if it has been, then, you know, good luck finding one. Don't care. It was a very informative post by user K3YMO at infosec.exchange. And I was just going to kind of read a lot of it. It has to do with people who are installing AI apps. He says, I got bored and ran uBlock while running the Claude, ChatGPT, and Gemini apps simultaneously. And it turns out you're paying AI companies a monthly subscription fee to get fingerprinted like a parolee. I mean, first of all, you know, from the is anybody surprised department. Here's the what he came up with. First of all, from Claude. Claude has, according, and I'm pretty much reading entirely what this user said. Claude has 6 parallel telemetry pipelines, a tracking GIF with 40 browser fingerprint data points baked into the URL, routed through a CDN proxy alias specifically to make it harder to block. So it's not going to a Google domain. It's going through a subcontractor domain or whatever. An intercom, I'm not sure what that means, running a persistent WebSocket, whether you use it or not. WebSockets, my understanding was they're kind of expensive to run, but, you know, nobody really gives a shit about computing resources these days, and what the hell, right? Honeycomb distributed tracing on a chat UI because apparently your conversation needs the same observability stack as a payments microservice. Did I say Google? Oh, this was Claude. Anyway, so yeah, like, these are the kind of things, the kind of tracking, the kind of user verification that you put on, like they said, a payment microservice on your bank architecture. All of these things being put on a chatbot in order to make sure that you're being tracked appropriately. Okay, let's move on. Let's go to OpenAI. Let's go to ChatGPT. It proxies the telemetry through their own backend to hide the data dog destination URL from blockers. I'm not familiar with the word data dog, but I do understand the idea of hiding the destination URLs by proxying. Why would you do that? Well, you might do that because you don't really want people to know who you're sending this data to. Don't know. uBlock had to deploy scriptlet injection. uBlock actually, it's a uBlock feature. It will actually inject JavaScript into the page to counter the JavaScript that the page is doing. In this case, to intercept the fetch call at the API level because a network rule was not enough to block the tracking from ChatGPT. ChatGPT also ships your usage data to Google Analytics. That's funny. OpenAI, Google, they're kind of competitors in this space, but ChatGPT is still shipping all of your usage data to Google. They run a proof of work challenge before you're allowed to type anything. That sounds more like a rate limiting thing, but at the same time, it is using up your CPU and memory resources on your browser. And anybody out there wonders why Chrome uses 100 megabytes per tab of memory? What's the third one that he looked at? Gemini. This one is Google. First of all, your full session behavior, if you run some kind of GlassWire or some kind of trace, you're going to see a dozen times per second requests sent out to play.google.com/log, sending your entire session behavior all the way down to where and when you move the mouse. These are all being authenticated with three SAPish D. I'm not sure. SAPish D hash. I don't know what that word is either. Again, reading. But authenticated with token variants. Piped directly into the Google identity super graph that correlates everything you've ever done across every Google product since 2004. I don't think anybody should be surprised to this, but it does need mentioning that, yes, if you use Gemini, they are going to correlate it with everything you've ever done on a Google product if you've been logged in. And if you're not logged in, then hopefully just everything you've ever done on the web since the last time you cleared your cookies. Gemini also creates a web app activity record in your Google account timeline.
Hold on, Sir Bemrose. How many normal end users are clearing their cookies?
Very few, I'm sure.
Okay, so I just wanted to make sure we were still in the land of reality.
I mean,
the end user usually doesn't.
No, they don't. And I don't even clear my cookies, not manually, but fortunately I have a rule in my an add-on or something that clears all my cookies every time that I log out.
You know, that whole, rule-based and programming thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's better that you do not take an ADHD mind and be like, you need to make sure you remember to do this every single time.
No, people
don't do that. It doesn't happen. And if I mentioned the last thing that Gemini does is it everything that you do in Gemini, everything you chat with Gemini, it creates what Google calls a web app activity record, which is the permanent record that Google stores in their data center of every activity you've ever done online, again, since the creation of your Google account. If you think anything in there is private, remember that it is not only being sent to Google, but it is being tied to you forever via your Google account. And then the last thing Gemini has, they have quote-unquote ads in their telemetry subdomain. Like they don't make the distinction between telemetry and ads. They're just same endpoint. When uBlock blocks Gemini's request, this was funny. The JavaScript exceptions, because uBlock blocks it by making the JavaScript fail, the exceptions bubble up to Gemini, and then Gemini dutifully tries to send those error details back to Google. uBlock blocks that again, and the result is the uBlock log is absolutely cascading with errors. But the interesting thing that this guy picked out was the messages contain the internal code names for every upsell pop-up that failed to load, and the names are things like ketchup, mustard, and mayo. Google named their subscription upsells after condiments. And
the only way
you know that is because the error handler snitched on them. Anyway, that was just Claude, ChatGPT, and Gemini. Be aware that every single one of these, this was not the free version. All of them are costing you money. You are paying the company to do this. And yet they are still collecting browser fingerprints, activity, information on you like you're the product. One of them is even running it over an ad.
Sounds like PTK, the Honor Society shit that I paid money to join and get the regalia for, and then they proceeded to sell my fucking email address to every college from here to fucking Mars.
So the recommendation on this one was, the recommendation at the bottom was touch grass and install uBlock Origin. Grass may be hard to come by this time of year, but I definitely stand behind the uBlock Origin one. There was one other, a couple other interesting bits in the thread where some people asked, well, what about some other AI, some other models, whatever. He did go ahead and check out Mistral. Had two block requests. One was Cloudflare Insights, which is really just, is this site up? And the other, it says, a single intercom beacon post that didn't even retry. That was it. No stat, no tracking GIFs, no Google Analytics. So Mistral is apparently one of the better ones. No ketchup discovery card. The other thing that he mentioned, it says, there's a French AI company nobody talks about, and apparently nobody talks about it so much that I didn't get the name of it. Running the cleanest front end in the entire field. That's Mistral. Okay, never mind. Yeah. So obviously the ones from the big Silicon Valley companies are going to turn out the worst. And they are, apparently, if you get your models from some of the smaller ones, especially the ones that nobody's heard of, like Mistral, you're going to do better. I don't know that I would trust them that far, but I guess the moral of the story is install ad blockers and don't trust big Silicon Valley companies.
Or just don't use AI.
Yeah, or just don't use AI. And as promised, I told you that my driest, crappiest story was going to be the one I started with because it was at the top of my notes file and I didn't feel like bouncing around. So there you go.
Well, okay. Well, it's funny that you talk about AI and the fact that
may be pleased to know that's actually the only AI story I brought.
I can't say that that's true, but this is, well, actually, yeah, there's. Yeah. Okay. One of them is kind of AI related, but not really. Okay. So, but this one we actually determined that we both had a similar story on the back end, and I'm going to do this one. So AI can now unmask anonymous internet users. New study finds. I mean, you know, again, you know, it's reading. You know, it's able to. Yeah. It's, you know, you think you're anonymous. Well, you know, it's funny because, yeah, so this is a paper called Large Scale Online De-Anonymization with LLMs. The researchers show that modern large language models can re-identify people behind pseudonyms online accounts at a scale and accuracy that surpass previous techniques. Well, I guess when you index all of social media,
yeah,
and you post your life on social media, you know.
And honestly, that really doesn't surprise me because, you know, for whatever... you know, godlike bullshit is being promised for what LLM. People are like, LLMs will cure cancer. LLMs will start a war in Iran and then end it. You know, people think that LLMs can do all this. But one of the few tricks they really do have and they can take huge codexes of data and tease out analytics. That is, in fact, what they're good at.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and they
or lying about it.
Well, yes.
Well, yeah.
They're very good at making shit up too. But if the data, you know, you're aware, by the way, most of the AI hallucinations happen because the AI has been told by its creators, you need to be helpful to the user in every case, and telling the user I don't know isn't helpful, and therefore it's basically trained for if you don't know, come up with an answer anyway. And that's kind of, I have this hypothesis. That's where AI hallucinations come from largely.
I don't disagree. It sounds very plausible.
Yeah, the idea that they have been trained that you always must come up with an answer, that is the most important thing. And if you don't have one, make something up. It's kind of a toddler thing to do, but most of the people who run these companies are kind of, were stunted as toddlers.
So now this is, what's interesting is the, let's see, of course they're using, you know, raw unstructured tests. They used three data sets with known ground truth. The first link, pseudonyms Hacker News used to real world LinkedIn profiles.
Truth, is that a spice?
Well, I don't know.
Yes, you find it right next to turmeric.
Yeah, but anyway, if you've ever spent any time on LinkedIn, people post all kinds of ridiculous shit on LinkedIn. You scratch your head and you just go, like, do you people have any, like, you know, this is supposed to be professional. How is this professional? Anyway,
where did you get that idea?
Yeah, I know. Well. That's how it was sold back in the day.
The only people who think that LinkedIn is professional are the people who don't go there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's not quite as bad as Reddit, although they did rely on cross-platform clues embedded in public tests in the set.
Yeah, Reddit is occasionally useful.
Yes, and that's actually what they used for the second. They match users across movie discussion communities on Reddit. The third takes a single Reddit user's history, splits it into two time-separated profiles, and tests whether the system can reconnect them. And across all three settings, LLM-based methods dramatically outperform classical baselines, which often achieve near-zero recall. You know, the headline numbers are striking, and in some experiments, the system was achieved up to 68% recall at 90% precision, meaning it correctly identified a substantial portion of targets while keeping false accusations low. So, I mean, that's not... You know, that's better than even money, I guess, you know, but I mean, this is what happens when you post your shit online. Now you've got now you've got rogue AIs going around and, you know, trying to learn off the random shit you said on the internet. I'm glad that I'm wondering if the stuff that I posted on Usenet back in the 90s has been read by an AI. Who knows?
That'd be funny.
Well, I know my book's been read by the AI because I keep getting mail from the legal firm that's doing the class action lawsuit for fucking Anthropic and their copyright settlement of, like, you know, $1.5 billion. Like, yeah, we basically pirated everything that's in our database. Great.
Oh, speaking of Anthropic, I didn't bring the story in my notes, but do we want to briefly touch on this supply chain threat bullshit?
I mean, sure. Why not?
Sure.
I assume you're vaguely aware of what happened here, and I don't really have a story on it. It hit the mainstream news so hard that you can find anything. But short version, what Anthropic has this idea, like this company idea that now that they've created the most, you know, destructive, like, Anthropic is cast in the part of Oppenheimer in this story. They created the nuclear bomb and then decided to suddenly grow a conscience and go out and be like, no, nobody is allowed to use this for evil. You can only blow up cities for good or something like that. They created, and I actually had in my notes several weeks back, but it's stale by now, that Anthropic has a Claude Constitution, which is basically a do no evil for AI.
We know how well that worked for Google.
Yeah. So I said this was a short version, and it's not, because I don't do that sort of thing. But what happened, last week, if we would have had a show, was, in case nobody has been paying close attention, President Donald Trump decided to go start a war in the Middle East, because I guess that's a thing presidents do. And one of the things the Department of Defense has been doing was using various defense contractors who happen to also be Silicon Valley LLM companies, using their stuff to do things like, I don't know, power drones. I don't actually honestly know exactly how it's been used, but somebody at Anthropic, the CEO maybe, got a bug up his ass and went up to and, you know, basically puffed out his chest and said, the U.S. government does not have our permission to use our AI for war, you know, whatever. I literally have the
story about how they used Claude in the strikes despite Trump's ban.
Okay. So, you want to... I like it, but let me just get out my immediate reaction, and that is at this point, I don't support the idea of the Trump administration doing this because it's the kind of thing that would absolutely be used by every single person on the left to automatically say, see, he is the fascist that we said he is. But if Trump was the fascist that everybody on the left thinks he is, then what would happen the moment that this dimwit CEO puffed out his chest and said, the federal government has to follow our terms of service? If Trump really was the kind of authoritarian that they all think he is, and his ass would be in jail and Anthropic would be nationalized, and then they would use Anthropic's products anyway. I don't give a shit who you think you are, and I'm not saying it's right, I'm not condoning this, but you do not, in this country, go up and try to dictate to the United States federal government whether or not they can use and how they are allowed to use things when you are taking government money as a defense contractor. So obviously the retaliation was that the Trump, I don't know if it's actually happened. I don't know any follow-up, but he announced on Truth Social that Anthropic was going to be listed as a supply chain risk, which basically means they lose all government contracts anywhere. And I'm pretty sure that the lawyers and bean counters and board are currently taking this idiot CEO out and giving him a well-deserved caning for it.
Probably. He called them a radical left AI company run by people who have no idea what the real world is all about.
Which sounds right. I don't disagree.
No, I don't either. And I think it's hilarious, like you said, that, you know, this dipshit CEO is pounding his chest like a silverback against literally, you know, POTUS, like, oh, da 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 da, like, okay, dude, sit down, Opie.
Well, I don't know if he realizes, this is just a weird ass gambit, because Silicon Valley terms of service are already on slightly shaky legal ground because they are unconscionable contracts of adhesion. And there have been a number of courts out there who are like, you can't enforce these terms just because you put it into a click wrap. These terms are, you know, they violate the Constitution. You can't do that. And this guy is coming out and literally saying, our terms of service trump national, sorry, our terms of service supersede national security. Our terms of service supersede the federal government. Now, you can give whatever legal arguments you want, but the simple fact is that the federal government has not really followed the law in decades. And do you even think that you can come out and just pound your chest and be like, we're more important than... this absolutely is the kind of thing that just gets Anthropic shut down. Like, what a fucking moron.
Well, it's about more than just the use of Claude in the Iraq attack or Iran attack. This started all the way back in January with the quote kidnapping of the president of Venezuela, and Anthropic threw a shit fit because in their terms of use, it says that Claude isn't allowed to be applied for violent ends, to develop weapons, or for surveillance. And that's what kicked this whole situation off.
Yeah, now, just to tell lonely kids to kill themselves. That's all it's supposed to do.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. It's all about customer satisfaction here. And as you know, or, you know, you might not, the defense secretary, Hegseth, or whoever the fuck he is, he is pissed at Anthropic, accusing them of arrogance and betrayal, adding that America's warfighters will never be held hostage by the ideological whims of big tech. I love that statement.
And he's not wrong. Now, it can easily and validly be argued that the exact kind of hubris that Anthropic is showing, you can turn around and be like, the federal government is showing the same hubris. That is absolutely an argument you can make. But let me point out Exhibit A, the federal government has the fucking guns.
Exactly. Now, what gets me is that it is going to take up to 6 months for this transition to a better and more patriotic service, as quoted. No joke, for them to seamlessly transition to one. Up to 6 months.
This doesn't sound seamless.
Come on, this is the government. This is the government we're talking about. There's nothing.
You're right. I'm sorry. 6 months to change a toilet paper roll is seamless.
Oh, but wait, because it gets better. Who do you think was first to jump in the saddle and be like, pick me for the new government contract?
I am pretty sure probably Sam Altman was up on that list.
That's exactly who the fuck it is.
Yeah, that
reached
guy
an agreement
has...
with the Pentagon for use in its classified network of the company's tools, which includes
Oh, he's perfect for it.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
perfect for it. That guy has no conscience whatsoever. He is
none,
a true psychopath.
None.
I just like to point out she almost broke the bell on that one.
I did. I damn near whooped it. I damn near beat that fucker like it owed me money.
Yeah, you whooped it with the Constitution.
I sure did.
Oh my. Well,
I just love the way like we all brought kind of stories that overlap one another. The Venn diagram on this is gorgeous.
Oh, every time.
Well, yeah,
it's almost like we read similar stories and have similar opinions, which probably doesn't make as good a podcast as it could. Like, if we hated each other, we might have a better podcast. So
you mean
fuck
like
you.
Grumpy Old Ben's?
Yeah, that was a pretty good podcast for reasons I already mentioned.
Oh, my.
I still liked ATN better. Better host.
ATN was another one where I did my damnedest to stay out of politics, but, you know... like I said, tech and politics are the two things that get me hot under the collar. And I know a lot less about politics, and there's a whole lot more people who would like to pipe bomb my mailbox for it. So I'll just stick to tech for most of the time.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I started reading into the article about the whole Trump-Claude thing, my first thought was, I really don't know if I want to bring this because, again, we are a tech show. We're not a political show. But then when you eat, like,
we're
first
just
step
a show
off,
full of random bullshit.
Yeah, we really, well, no, that's the Lotus Effect. Saturdays, 8 Central.
Yeah, see, that's a show I don't mind stepping on.
Or in.
Yeah. That's when you sit there walking sideways, scraping your foot against the carpet after you do that.
I was going to say, we leave a film that you can't wash off.
Film at 11.
I think it's your turn to bring the next round.
Wait, did that one count as your story?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of meat to it.
All right.
Basically, the TLDR was Trump. Trump.
I didn't even...
Trump is pissed.
Trump is pissed. Hashtag show title.
The funny thing is I'm completely sober. I just apparently...
Well,
my
there's your problem.
I
just identified your problem.
But no, basically the TLDR was Trump is pissed at, you know, fucking Anthropic over this... Called him, you know, said what he said about being radical left AI, yada, yada,
yeah.
yada. And Sam Altman, of course, was like, Mr. Trump, if we could have a conversation
yes.
over here. Yeah, that's
yeah
the
of course he did. Yeah, of course he did. Like I said, Sam Altman, that is one person. I mean, you know, not that I'm a psychologist or anything, but pure fucking sociopath. He has no conscience. Of course he'll step in.
Well,
did I say that out loud? I'm sorry. That may have been slander, and of course, it, you know, I only do that in Minecraft.
Well,
does that still work?
I'm not sure.
Did that
There's
ever
a reason
work?
We do this show?
Okay, I do want to back up. During the worst story I've done so far today, I mentioned a technology called Datadog, which I had not honestly heard of. But then again, I don't do a lot of web development, and I certainly don't track people's habits on the web. So why would I have? Cotton Gin in the in the chat room brought some, he brought the information and I appreciate that. He says, it is a company of, or service. They do telemetry and analysis of it for like stats and stuff. You get a nifty dashboard, cloud monitoring as a service. It isn't even AI. They're all over the web though. If you use any large site, you have likely used Datadog without even knowing it. I am quite sure that's, I mean, that's likely, which is also one of the reasons why I try to limit the number of large sites that I use. You know, my primary social media is in fact a single person, personal Mastodon domain that I run out of my own colo. Thank you to Cotton Gin for calling that out. And I'm probably going to look that up just for my own information, not because I think that I should correct anything that I say on here. I figure if AI can be as confident in their hallucinations, I may as well do the same thing.
Hey, proof you are an AI.
Allegedly.
I mean, what?
Okay.
You're an AI. I'm a bot. What were you, phone boy? I'm a Perl script.
I just went through my notes file. I actually have 8 stories listed. This is just either we need to speed up or I need to start dropping some. But you know what? I'm not going to drop them. I'm just going to keep going down the list. They're going to get better as they go because I want to drive away all of our users with the really dry, crappy stories. So let's start with something really quick. This one came from a notice published by the FBI. Quote, the FBI Seattle division is seeking to identify potential victims installing Steam games embedded with malware. The FBI believes the threat actor primarily targeted users between the time frame of May 2024 and January 2026. If you and or your minor dependent were victimized from installing one of these games by Steam or have information relevant to the investigation, please fill out this form, blah, 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 blah. Short version, Steam... the FBI is putting out a notice about, they said 8 different games. The interesting bit is that they only listed in the article 7 games. I know I can count. That I thought was weird, but whatever, you know. So these games are all Steam games, which are in fact verified by Valve, which take that for what you will. Steam is an app store. It suffers from the same problems as every other app store, which is that the companies will shout about how everything that they use is verified and safe and how they've checked everything. And then shit gets through anyway, because there are a whole lot more people working against the companies than there are people working for the companies. And the, you know, if your job is to, you know, what is your job? Install a game, play through it, and then check and see if all of your data has been leaked to the dark web. I mean, that is a monumentally difficult task. So I have lots of reasons for shitting on Steam. They really deserve it. Not least of which their auto update policies fuck them. But, the fact that these things got through, I'm not really going to drop on Steam. However, what you've got is several free-to-play games. I'll go ahead and give the list. Block Blasters, Chemia, Dashverse, Lampy, Lunara, Pirate Fi, and Tokenova. And if you have heard of any of those, you use Steam way too fucking much. But apparently all of them are free-to-play games. So what this story is, and my bringing it here, is that this is a PSA saying, you know, free-to-play games is like ad-supported websites. If you're not paying for it, you're paying somehow. In this particular case, I went actually back to a Bleeping Computer article from September 2025, which brought up the Block Blasters, which I get, says it is a 2D platformer that was available on Steam for almost 2 months between July 30th and September 21st. The game was safe until the end of August. And then in an update, which, by the way, fuck you, Steam, you cannot skip the updates. In a game update, a crypto drainer component was added, and the game suddenly became the kind of thing that scans your hard drive, looks for any crypto wallets, and empties them for you.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And let me guess, nobody bothered to do any kind of sanitization or checking.
It was 7 weeks later that this finally came to light when a streamer who was trying to raise money for his cancer diagnosis or something, it was something tear-jerking like that, noticed that when he was playing, he was live streaming this game and checked it at the end of the game for how many donations did I get, and realized that the game had stolen $30,000 worth of Bitcoin from him.
Holy shit.
He was streaming it.
That's dark.
Yeah. The article notes that the developer had been around for 2 years, although this was only their second game. The developer is no longer on Steam now. What a surprise.
Gee, shock. Yeah.
Free-to-play game, promising fast-paced action on responsive controls, and there were several hundred, quote, very positive reviews in the Steam store. What a surprise. AI makes that really easy. So, like I said, this is a PSA. I don't even know how many times on this very show we have brought dire warnings about don't randomly install shit from app stores, because no matter how much the app store maker wants to tell you that they check everything, there is malware in app stores, and Steam is an app store. And I will tell you, like, if you want to try to be really careful about it, look for a game that you have to pay for. Those are a lot less likely to be, free to play is you download this game, you're not paying anything for it. You just play and, argue the business model for free to play was originally, they put ads in the game and most people are cool with that. But the business model for free to play games now is they scan your hard drive for your wallets and they steal your money out of your bank account. That's a hell of a business model, don't you think?
It's effective.
Yeah. I mean, how are people going to know,
Well, I guess if you get cancer somehow and try to raise money through streaming, that's if you want to check, go ahead and just, I can't necessarily recommend that.
No.
I mean, and then my son wonders why I don't game, why I don't want to download any of these, particular platforms for any reason.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you want to talk about hidden things, though?
No, not really.
Well, no. Well,
oh, okay.
Well, this is so apparently,
it can stay hidden.
Well,
okay, go.
Okay, we have a dev who's stunned by an $82,000 Gemini bill, and after an unknown API key thief goes to town. So, yeah, basically, the dev said,
this sounds like some OpenClaw level stuff.
Yeah, I'm in a state of shock and panic right now, the dev wrote on Reddit and went on to detail how a startup's Google Cloud API key was somehow compromised between February 11th and February 12th. During that time, unknown miscreants used the key to spend $82,314.44, primarily on Gemini 3 Pro image and Gemini 3 Pro text.
All those tokens were used up. Is
for porn?
Yeah, that's exactly I was going to say
they were probably vibe coding free to play games on Steam.
Exactly.
Nice.
So, of course, after deleting the compromised key, disabling the Gemini APIs, rotating credentials, and taking other security precautions, the developer says he opened a support case with Google and got nowhere.
Oh, there's a surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what?
From the no-shit Sherlock department.
Yeah, exactly.
He probably would have had more luck opening a ticket with Microsoft for where he pushed his API key to GitHub or something.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, because a Google representative allegedly cited the company's shared responsibility model. Google secures its platform and users must secure their own tools, and said the chocolate factory had to charge the developer for the unauthorized API costs. This, the dev wrote, really worries me. If Google attempts to enforce even a third of this amount, our company goes bankrupt. We're barely surviving and hoping one of our projects work. And it looks like he may not be alone in his worries or in experiencing API key compromises.
Does the article call out how he lost the key? That seems relevant here, because this feels like a Play Stupid Games sort of thing.
Yeah, it probably is. Because Truffle Security scanned millions of websites and found 2,863 live Google API keys, originally used as project identifiers for billing purposes, but that now also authenticate to Gemini, thus giving attackers access to sensitive data.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, okay. Then this is Google's fault. Excellent. Everything is right with the world.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's just, this is, yeah. I mean, oh, my God. And people... people just keep doing this, and it's the same shit. It's like nobody knows how to use this stuff or is aware enough to go, yeah, that's actually something I want to treat like gold. I don't want to put my fucking credentials anywhere that I don't need to, especially if I'm, you know, especially like a small business or something. You kind of go, yeah, somebody gets access to that. You know, that's the first time I looked at Amazon Web Services, looked at the billing, and I go, well, I'm not using that. That's fucking expensive, you know?
Yeah, it just, how many times have we looked into stories where it's very clear that you've got somebody who's like, let's start by coding up something insanely cool, and then, oh, maybe we should secure it afterward. And people do not realize it. Like, you, I don't know if it requires that you have spent time in the security field or something, but when do people realize that you can't secure something afterward? You have to build security in from the beginning.
Yeah, well, Exhibit A, okay,
they don't.
You know, I still remember the time that I learned how to spoof an SMTP message, and you know, with you know, this is back in 1990 Mumble.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There was no spam protections back then, so you could actually get away with spoofing a message from root@heaven.org.
I remember back when I was working on Windows, and we had this thing where I had a batch file that was part of our test app that had a list of the IP addresses of the developer computer for everyone on the test team. And what would happen is when the test run completed, it would go ahead and go through that list and use the NT API, if you recall, that you could ping from an outside computer and cause a message box to pop up on the desktop. And everybody thought that was absolutely the coolest feature ever put into Windows. And I looked at it and went, this is incredibly dangerous. This is a bad idea. And they were like, no, keep it. We love it. And so I just kind of removed my IP from the list. And this was probably 5 or 10 years before the worm came out that suddenly was doing this from every infected computer. And you suddenly couldn't compute because there were pop-ups on your desktop all day long, usually with things like porn ads and spam.
Yeah, I remember having to, I went over to the neighbor's house one time, and I saw their computer is running Windows XP, not even Service Pack 1. There's no firewall on this thing. And yeah, I looked it up and I went, yeah, this is a nuke from orbit situation. There was so much malware and crap and porn.
I mean, am I like, is this a you had to be there moment? Windows actually had a service that was on by default and open to the internet by default that you send a packet to a certain port. This was actually a feature. There was an API to do it. You send a packet to a port, and if you knew the IP address, you could make a message box pop up on their screen on top of whatever they were doing. Somebody thought this was a good idea.
Oh, okay. There's so much potential written all over that.
Well, yeah,
there was. And when the scammers and spammers and worm writers finally figured it out, then, you know, Microsoft rushed through a patch to suddenly disable that port or disable that service by default.
Yeah, because listening to the programmers who, much like yourself, said this is a bad idea. No, they don't want to listen to them.
No, they don't want to listen to them. I don't know. But anyway, okay. So I think, honey, it's your turn to come up with a story. So,
well, in keeping with the theme, I have one that I think might touch Sir Bemrose in a special place because OpenClaw has yet another major security flaw.
You mean other than OpenClaw?
Well, don't leave your OpenClaw with an easy password. I'll tell you that much.
Don't leave your claw open, I think, is the lesson here.
I mean, this is true. You know, apparently it's a high severity flaw which allows threat actors to steal sensitive data from the target computers with relative ease. And the bug was discovered by security researchers from OASIS and was patched following responsible disclosure. And of course, I'm using finger quotes on that because we know that, you know, how responsible is it that you even have something so fucking insecure?
Well, the irresponsible parties are usually the ones who left their security wide open, but what do I know?
Well, I mean, apparently this is a brute forcing vulnerability, but the very design of OpenClaw left a gaping security hole, which apparently is really easy exploit.
Let's be very clear. The very design of OpenClaw has no security.
Yes.
Therefore, there's not a security hole. That's like building a lean-to with no walls and saying, boy, it feels a little drafty at this hole over here by the door.
Well,
sorry.
No, I don't disagree. So it's very simple. It doesn't require, this particular vulnerability doesn't require a third-party add-on, previous compromise, anything like that. And this made me laugh when I read it, is that all the victim needs to do is visit a malicious website. Hmm. Okay. But
you mean like openclaw.org? I'm not going to slow down on this. I think that this entire product is a terrible, terrible idea that nobody should ever install, no matter how much the idea of AI gives you a woody.
No, I don't disagree with you. I absolutely don't. Because and I'm sure this will interest you guys, that the vulnerability lives in the core system itself. No plugins, no marketplace, no user installed extensions, just the bare OpenClaw gateway running exactly as documented. I mean, truly, by its design, it is absolutely rickety as fuck. No security guardrails, nothing at all. Now, because it runs a local WebSocket server that handles authentication and more, nodes such as companion apps and other machines connect to the gateway, expose capabilities, run system commands, access the camera, all that shit, and the gateway can dispatch commands to any connected node. You guys know how authentication is handled via a token or a password, and you know the gateway binds to local hosts by default.
Or an MD file.
Yeah, exactly. So check it out. So if the victim visits a malicious website, the JavaScript can open a WebSocket connection to a local host and brute force the gateway password with ease and authenticate as a fully trusted device. Just poof, really easy. Snap your fingers and you're in. Now, once that happens, the attacker's got full control. You're fucked. At that point, they can interact with the agent, dump config data, enumerate connection devices, read logs. I mean, it's soup to nuts. Coup de grace. Now, of course, they say that a fix was deployed 24 hours after initial disclosure. And of course, users are, you know, encouraged to upgrade.
And how many users can have everything that they've ever done exfiltrated in 24 hours? When you have AI doing it.
I mean, depends on how many zombies you have working it.
Yeah. OpenClaw, go get me the data of every other OpenClaw user. Oh, okay, take care. I'll take care of that.
Exactly. And you wake up to, you know, it sitting in the file you've directed it to. And yeah, it's just gross. I mean, honest to God, I mean, these researchers are saying it's the most severe AI-driven vulnerability they've ever found. That is a heavy statement.
That is. And I would argue that OpenClaw is the most severe AI-driven vulnerability ever.
I'm just glad that CSB has cooled off on his hatred of our obvious exposure of how bad OpenClaw really is.
He's a pretty good guy. He's pretty reasonable. He just has this AI fetish thing going on, which is fed by the fact that he gets money to have an AI fetish. And, you know, that's an enviable position to be in. But
yeah, I like money, though.
Yeah, I like money too.
It's amazing the things we'll do for money.
So my next story is one, a beautiful tale of how green energy has once again proven its worth. For this, we go to a town, which I'm not kidding. I had to look it up just to make sure. Did a double take. The town is called Wheatfield, Indiana.
It sounds like a name of a town in Indiana. It also sounds like the name of a town in the middle of Washington State, too.
So there is a location in Wheatfield, Indiana, which I looked at on the satellite maps. And in fact, looks like that's pretty much what's there. So truth in advertising, I suppose, except for one square, roughly a half mile by a half mile. That is the Dunn's Bridge 1 and Dunn's Bridge 2 solar farms. This is, I went ahead and looked it up. This is a solar installation that it was actually difficult to come up with the rating of it. I think they don't list the megawatts rating on solar farms like they do with things like, you know, plants that run all the time, because solar farms are, you know, they shut off when there's things like clouds or nighttime. What they actually listed was they said, oh, it created 500 gigawatt hours of power last year, which if I math a little bit, turns out to be about 60 megawatts average, which means, you know, roughly twice that when the sun is shining and half that when none when the sun is not shining, whatever. It's a solar farm. It takes up, a half mile by half mile square. So that turns out to be what, about 160 acres, 150. This thing, opened in June of 2023 at a cost of, about $250 million. I mean, about $125 million. I mean, it wasn't cheap. It was a big solar farm. It operated from June of 2023 until last Wednesday, March 10th of 2026, when it was destroyed by a tornado.
Oh my God.
So the article that I had listed, I have both one from an anti-green energy site, and I also have an ABC affiliate site. The utility emphasized that while debris may have been, there were a lot of people immediately saying, what about all the shit that they just spread all over the place? Because tornadoes tend to break things and throw their debris all over. And they say the debris may have been displaced. Environmental risks from panel leaching are minimal based on industry research. Oh, my God. Red flag. Industry research.
Yeah. Well, if we know about it it's kind of like trusting the drug companies to test their own drugs.
Exactly. So we have no idea what the actual environmental risks are from panel leaching. What we know is, you know, whatever rare earth metals go into these things, these solar panels, each one is basically, a dozen iPhones worth of rare metals and glass and circuitry. I mean, it's not, they're not trivial. And you have thousands and thousands of them that were just destroyed and have their panels scattered all over the place. I don't think we have any idea, and I don't think we'll ever know exactly how much of, but I'm not even super worried about, these poor wheat fields in Indiana are now filled with lithium or whatever the hell was in these panels. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? We could poison our food supply. I think we're past that. But another thing in the announcement from the company, they said with redundancy built into the system, any shortfall from the farm, this was talking about the loss of power generation. Any shortfall from the farms can be offset by other renewables, natural gas, or imports. Okay, first of all, we know goddamn well that other renewables are not going to offset anything. Renewables, as a rule, are utter shit for power generation and not reliable in any way. Natural gas, yeah, I totally believe that that will probably be used to offset. Imports, yeah, okay, so we are, in a hallmark of woke power generation, every single time that your barely subsistent power system has any kind of failure, you just go get power from somebody who doesn't have woke environmental laws. You end up importing natural gas from China or Russia or somewhere. You know that's what's happening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what's happening in Germany that went all in on that stuff. And it's like, yeah. they have to burn diesel. I'm like, how is that any better for the fucking environment?
And the quote says, with the redundancy that's built into the system, you know damn well that green power doesn't have redundancy, because redundancy means more plants, and more power plants are evil, according to the green religion.
Well,
so there's no redundancy. They're trying to remove the redundancy, and now they're saying, oh, well, we're okay. So they finish up with, don't worry, this is all insured. We're going to get it back. However, if repair costs exceed insurance recoveries, by the way, the repair costs are likely going to be a huge, huge proportion of how much it took to just put the damn thing together. And they say, if repair costs exceed what insurance will cover, we could seek rate adjustments through regulatory filings, potentially adding a small increment to consumer bills. Congratulations, Northern Indiana. Your power is about to go up. Your power rates.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's yeah. I mean, I don't know that. Yeah, of course there's. Yeah. I mean, I have one of those. I have one of those articles. You know, I didn't pull it in, but I have it in my list. Are consumers doomed to pay more for electricity due to data center buildouts? Oh, no. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Although that's a rating structure problem. And the fix to that, by the way, is to make the people running the data centers pay their proportional amount instead of putting it on all ratepayers.
Well, I think they should pay to have the power plants built too, because the reason the extra capacity needed is for them. So
there's the better idea, because the rate for everybody goes up when demand goes up, because you don't have enough supply, because you have environmentalists telling us all that you can't build new you can't build new gas plants, you can't build new coal plants, and you sure as fuck can't build anything nuclear. No, let's put up acres and acres and acres of solar panels that are so much flying glass in a tornado.
Yeah.
And then, it's amazing, by the way, how all the big Silicon Valley AI companies are suddenly turning around on their green positions, green energy. No, we need more energy. And by the way, just to be clear, what kind of structure lasts really well in a tornado? I don't know, something really squat and blocky and made out of concrete. And then you know what you can do? You could put a nuclear reactor inside of that. You know what you've got? You've got tornado-resistant power. Instead of creating a huge fucking field of iPhones to shatter and blow all over the place and lose 100% of their value the moment the wind starts.
No, that would make too much sense. So of course I'm kind of getting this idea now. It's like, they couldn't have made this even more environmentally unfriendly if they tried.
Green power be like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because actually, they've memory holed all the good stuff in that regard. I mean,
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah, I don't know if you knew this, but PSE. Yeah, you've heard of Puget Sound Energy.
They used to be when I lived in Port Orchard. Yeah, anyway.
PSE recently unveiled, to much fanfare, the idea that they are going to, they have been talking about, the fact is, in the Pacific Northwest, I don't know if you knew this, it rains a lot, and we have some very steep geographical gradients. So it's pretty much perfect for hydropower. The vast majority of the power in this part of the country comes from hydroelectric dams. And PSE is talking about, because fish want to use it, they have been talking about for years about how they want to breach all their dams. And they're actually having problems with having enough power, because they keep tearing down their dams and replacing them with nothing. Well, they came up, by the way, and this, I don't have a story or article on this, it just happened recently, to much fanfare and cheers from everybody in the Seattle political scene, the idea of how they're going to replace the lost power from taking out the hydroelectric dams. Would you like to guess? I bet you can guess.
Yeah, build more hydroelectric dams?
No, they're putting up solar farms.
Of course.
In Western Washington.
Yeah. I literally can't even.
Wait a minute. A state that is known for liquid sunshine. And they're putting up solar farms.
Nice execution.
You do interesting.
You're familiar with the show Pinky and the Brain from way back?
Of course
we
are. Oh,
of course.
Okay. That one of my absolute favorite episodes of that, the plot of it was that the Brain was building a doomsday device, and he was going to base the device in Seattle, and it was in order to take over the world. You know, that's pretty much all the plots. And the device was solar powered. And at the very end of the episode, the penultimate line is, I was wrong, Pinky. There is no sun in Washington.
Truth.
Yeah. Yes. And yeah, they don't make chaps in our size. I can tell you that. My goodness. Yes. All right. Okay.
If I may, in regards to the story that Sir Bemos just bought, let me try that again. My teeth. Cool. In regards,
apparently you may not.
To the story Sir Bemrose just brought, I know where Wheatfield is. I've been up through there.
I know where lots of wheat fields are. I just didn't know somebody would have the unoriginality to name their town that.
Believe me, the area in which it's in is as farmlandy as you can imagine it to be. However, my thought is, what a complete fucking idiotic thing to do. If you're looking for a power generation source in that area, put up a fucking wind farm, not a solar farm, you monkeys. In that area is unbelievable. It is the only time driving through Spiceland,
especially
Indiana,
when tornadoes are coming through.
No shit. This is what I'm saying, but non-tornado days. The only time I've ever pulled my truck over and parked it for wind was in Indiana, Spiceland to be exact. And I felt like a pussy because I'm like, who the fuck pulls over for wind? But then when you think about, I have nothing in the box and this thing's trying to relocate me into the other lane every time the wind blows. And of course, wind is most dangerous because you can't see it. It just all of a sudden fucking hits you. The only option or the only kind of warning system you have is trees
bending. Your big clue
bending.
Is, your trees bending, trucks in front of you fall. You know, if you don't pay attention to the warning signs like other trucks falling over, then you're just driving along and suddenly you're on two wheels and now you're not on any wheels.
Exactly. You're rolling over for a belly rub. So, yeah, I mean, for a moment, I kind of felt like, you know, a puss. But then I called one of my friends who's got a lot more time on the seat than I do and was reassured that no, in fact, that does not make you a pussy. That makes you intelligent because you live to drive another day. And I personally never wanted to be upside down or anything but shiny side up. So
I believe you because I don't want to screw with the wind. We actually had one of our classic Western Washington windstorms out here, which are nothing compared to what you get in the Midwest for two very simple reasons. We have two things over here that make it so wind isn't a huge problem. One is we have geography, and two is we have these natural wind breaks that grow out of the ground called trees.
I was going to say, do they call them trees?
Yes. Now, the problem with the trees is that when the wind blows really hard, now you, instead of just air hitting you, you have pieces of tree hitting you.
Yeah,
but
they
what
like
do
to
you
hit
do?
Power lines, too.
Yes, they do. And that's why we keep all of our power lines up in the air instead of underground.
Well,
but I was going to say, though, we had one of those windstorms, and I was shuttling a couple of our vans to, you know, at work to the next station up in Burlington, and caught a stretch of Interstate 5 that just happened to not have any trees. It was just fields on both sides. And so you come out of the vast majority of the freeway is just trees on both sides. So you don't even realize how windy it is, except that these 100-foot tall Doug firs are moving back and forth like they're breakdancing. And then you come out into a cut where there's no trees. And holy shit, before I knew it, I was, on the shoulder just about driving off the road. Like suddenly your steering just isn't going the right direction anymore.
Exactly.
And that was just a small cargo van.
I There was one time we were coming through Wyoming, and of course they don't have a lot of those windbreaks that grow out of the ground. Yeah. Lots of open space, unfortunately. And we
in Wyoming, a windsock is a chain hanging from something.
That is no fucking lie. Oh, especially Rollins, man. Whew. Anyway, so we saw that there was, the lighted sign over the interstate said, you know, high profile vehicles, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And so we called, you know, because it said no light vehicles. Okay. So we called the...
So it has to all be what, like black, dark blue, brown?
Right. So we call State Patrol and we're like, okay, just for clarification, what do you mean by light vehicle? Because I'm thinking...
Cars.
Even like, no.
Heavy vehicle is a train, and they're sometimes okay in the wind in Wyoming.
Here's the funny thing. The definition we were told was if... Because empty, you're looking at like 30-something thousand pounds between the cab and the trailer, just basic weight. So... I asked him, like, how do you define a light vehicle? He said, if you get blown over, you were a light vehicle.
Yeah.
Good enough for me, dude. I'm parking. Fuck it.
Also, I would absolutely prefer to drive my 4,000-pound sedan versus your $30,000-pound wind sail.
Well, that's why, if you notice, trailers now have the skirting underneath. It's supposed to... Now, I say supposed to. Yeah. It's supposed to block the wind. All that shit does is trap the fucking wind and make you a kite.
I'm sure it does things to aerodynamics, and I'm sure that, you know, the people installing it say that it's good. Yeah, I've never driven one, so I'll take your word for it.
Well, when you have to crawl under the trailer, and believe me, there are times you have to, that just gets in the fucking way.
I'm sure that's true. Or when you have to sleep under the trailer because California made it illegal to sleep in your car.
Yeah, they have that whole you're not allowed to idle thing. And if you've ever been to California in the summertime, you can go fuck yourself.
Well, California.
We should do some tech news.
Yes. So
that's what they came here for.
Okay, so I think it's my turn for a story now. We've got 1 billion identity records exposed in ID verification data leak. So... Researchers at Cyber News, a cybersecurity news and research publication, discovered an exposed MongoDB database on November 11th, 2025, that they believe belongs to ID Merit, a global identity verification provider that serves banks, fintech firms, and other financial services. ID Merit uses artificial intelligence tools to help businesses.
Of course they do.
Yes.
I was going to say, who's surprised about that?
Yes, they perform KYC, otherwise known as Know Your Customer, which is the identity verification process required when you open financial accounts.
Otherwise known as KY Jelly for your data.
Yes. Yes.
Write it, KY Jelly for your data.
Yes, I'm Jelly for your data. Yeah, that's... Yeah, but here's what's bad about this, right? The database was not even protected by a password. Anyone
no,
who knew,
that would be inconvenient to the coder.
Yes, exactly. Anyone who knew where to look could access it. Inside were full of names, home addresses, postal codes, dates of birth, national ID numbers, phone numbers, email addresses, and gender information. You know,
is this an Etsy shadow thing?
Yeah. Some records also include telecom-related metadata and internal flags that may have referenced past breaches. The exposure affects people in 26 countries, and the United States had the highest number of exposed records at more than 203 million.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do so many stories about these breaches, and I know we do like 3% of the stories because the number of it's just if your data is in a Silicon Valley database somewhere, it will be breached. The only protection you have is not, I really trust this company or trust this company even harder. No. Your only protection is don't put your data in the database. And if that means not using the Dancing Monkey app, then don't fucking install the Dancing Monkey app.
Yeah, or as we say, don't digitize your dick. Well, by the way, so
that's just good, clean fun.
Yeah, so, well.
No, there's nothing clean about Yeah.
So.
Okay. Good.
But here's okay. So this actually is reminds us of something that we're having to deal with in the class arena. So.
My pen testing class. I know exactly what you're about to say.
Yeah. So. The teacher is asking the students to use these third-party sites to do some of their assignments, right? And of course, you have to give them an email address.
Oh, right? Wait, no. Back up just a moment, because it's not just about a homework assignment. The first test was on this first platform. Now it's a homework assignment on this next platform.
So the issue is, of course, now you get, and so we kind of, it's like, yeah, why do I have to sign up for a third party site? Well, and I sort of, so we kind of sat down and thought about the risk model. I actually sort of thought about the risk model of this, right?
That's what you turn in, by the way, is you draw up the security model for connecting to this third party site, and you
that
turn
is
that
brilliant.
In.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So, okay, so you have to, okay.
That's some bullshit we would totally do, Sir Bemrose, I assure you.
Yeah. So, anyway, the question is, okay, so we have to provide an email address. Okay, so what's the harm? So you might ask the question, what's the harm in providing an email address? Well, okay.
So, I don't ask that question. I've got a pretty good idea.
Yeah, you got a pretty good idea, right? But I sat and I thought about it. I said, okay, so because I need to articulate this to somebody, right? So let's say, okay, so what happens with our email, right? It gets passed along to fucking everybody, whether it's through a breach or them just fucking sharing the data, PTK, for instance, right?
Exactly, the one I was bitching about earlier.
Okay, and now what's the other sort of interesting? This is, I'm sure if I gave a fuck enough, I could go look up the statistic that my day job quotes. But pretty much, you know, one of the most common ways that malware or malicious things get into your environment is email. So now what you've done by forcing me to give my email to a site whose terms and conditions I don't know. I don't know what their cybersecurity practices are. I'd rather not do business with them. I'd rather not do any goddamn thing with them.
Yeah, because these are not sites that I would natively be trolling along and looking on or joining outside of a requirement for my grade.
Yeah. And so I'm getting spam, which might, because we know how well these companies protect your data. I mean, you know, you talked about all the different, the different breaches and shit like that. It's like, yeah, pretty much if anybody, you know, your email address is out there, whether you want it or not. Right. And guess what? Right. If you give that address to somebody, okay, now you're going to get more spam. You're going to get, and oh, by the way, some of that might be malicious. And so now, and what I'm having to do in order to do this, I have to actually, yeah, I don't, this is where we talk about data sovereignty. Don't digitize your dick. Don't give out your email address to somebody you don't trust. And it's being required in this class, which is just kind of ridiculous. And, you know, not, and it's like you're at, in a class where you're supposed to learn good OPSEC for cybersecurity, you're actually being asked to commit one of the worst, which is giving your data to a site you don't trust.
So I've got a really quick tech tip. So the original tip came up, I don't know, probably close to 15 years ago, but it was something that I used a lot for a long time. Are you familiar with the word Mailinator?
Oh, yes, I am.
Yes. That, solid advice. Just for the record, here's what, when Mailinator was created, here's what they did. They had a site that, It was, I mean, amazingly simple. You could go to mailinator.com, like some URL /inbox/phoneboy. You just go there, and what you'll probably see is nothing. But if anybody happened to have sent an email to phoneboy@mailinator.com, that email would be listed there.
Yeah, and
that's all it is. Yeah, there's no sign up. There's no creating anything. There's no. It was. I mean, here's the user model is. I want to create an account at this place that demands an email and is going to send me an email back in order to verify that I'm really a person or that I, you know, really. It's every fucking site in the world. Their account just will send you something to verify that you have an email there. So I will say, they'll be like, give me an email address. And I'll say, yeah, my email is sirbemrose@mailinator.com. And then they would send it on, and I would visit mailinator.com/Sir Bemrose or whatever, and the email would be there. And these emails are always deleted after 24 hours or something. They don't want to store it, but it was amazingly easy. I don't have to give up a damn thing. I could be, you know, Joe Schmo at Mailinator, and all they have, they don't have my real email. Amazing service. Now, I keep saying the name, but Mailinator.com got sold out to an ad tracking company about 5 years ago. Do not use Mailinator.com for anything anymore. However, a link that I just dropped into the chat room was to alternative2.net, which is another site I love all the time, listing over 100 other services that have popped up with the same model now that Mailinator sold out and collects your data.
Well, yeah. There is one thing in the Tom Collins ecosystem that's kind of useful. They have you can generate private iCloud addresses that are basically the same thing. They're disposable addresses, and they forward to whatever address you tell it to. And then if you get to, when you start getting too much spam, you just delete it and it, you know, all the mail.
Start getting too much spam. Like, that sounds like they're persistent. So what it sounds like is, instead of handing Joe Schmo's forum online all of your data, you're just handing all of your usage data to Tim Apple.
Well, yeah, but if you're using Tim Apple, you're doing that anyway. So, you know, like I said, there's...
I mean, to each their own. I'm just not... That's not feeling like it's clean to me.
No, I know. I'm just saying it is an alternative. I'm not saying it is the best alternative.
There's a number of alternatives, but I guess my tip here is when somebody demands your email address for anything, you don't have to give them your email address. You have to give them an email address. And by the way, one of the other things that Mailinator.com did before they sold out that became really useful, see, the forum operators and the sites online started to wise up to the idea that, well, if I got an email address that ended in Mailinator.com, then that's a throwaway address and I'll just ban it. I won't allow it for the account. So what they ended up doing was registering a lot of domains. And then pretty soon they were like, well, we can't keep registering. But if you want to register a domain and donate it to Mailinator and just direct it to our IP address, then we'll do the same thing. So you could register, you know, catsex.com. Actually, that's probably taken. And... give
it
to Mailinator.
Are you telling us your secret email address, sir?
I, no, not that you're aware of. Although, if you do digitize your dick and send it to that address, I'll make sure that it gets to all of the dark web.
Okay. Yes.
We knew we could count
anyway,
on you.
So, yeah, after a while, the number, you know, it was an arms race. There were shared ban lists amongst various WordPress operators who would maintain lists of places that went to Mailinator type temporary emails. And the number of domains, every time a domain was identified, it went on the list, and then they'd just let that domain expire and they'd create a new one. Somebody had created a new, it was a cat and mouse game that there's always more people trying to fake out the system than there are trying to prop it up.
Yeah.
I always just really appreciated that, and I was very sad when Mailinator themselves sold out and became a data collection service.
Yeah.
But fortunately, there's a lot of options now.
Yeah, well, the point is that they're asking for bad OPSEC, right? Because just giving out your email address is potentially increasing.
Yes, they are.
You know, because
of course they are absolutely asking for bad OPSEC. And what I'm saying is that you need to correct your OPSEC by giving them fake information. When somebody gives you demands information that they don't need, that is none of their fucking business, you do not. Oh, well, the form won't let me, you know, the way they always enforce it is the form won't let me continue on to see the naked pictures of, I don't know what, until I give them information. But you don't have to give them true information. And good OPSEC is only give them the true information that they actually need to provide you the service. The rest of it, fill it out with bullshit. Poison their database. Fuck it up. Make their database useless to the data collectors. more people did that, we'd be a lot more private online.
Well, yeah, again, but a cybersecurity class should be teaching you good OPSEC, not bad OPSEC, especially a pen testing class.
Exactly.
I absolutely agree, but I was really trying not to get into a rant against your college.
Oh, no, please, rant.
Yes, but in any case, honey, I think it's your turn to have something to rant about tech-wise.
You know, it's funny that we mentioned college, because the last submission that I have since I relented the pseudonymous story to you, this comes as no surprise that professors are scrambling to save critical thinking in the age of AI.
Professors today know what that is.
No joke.
If your professor is under 50, I'm not sure that they even have a clue what that is anymore.
Well, it's interesting that you mention that, because I'm fairly positive I'm older than the one that's instructing the pen testing and basically being lazy as fuck, but that's just my opinion. So, there are actually professors like this one at Stanford that is experimenting with ways to get her students to learn offline. You know, she has them memorize poems and, you know, actually have recitation events. They go to, you know, look at art in the real world. It's an effort to reconnect them to the bodily experience of learning. And I think it's a really good starting point, because way too much of our learning is being handed over to LLMs. And I mean, you've heard me talk.
That's not actually called learning, by the way.
No, I know that. All right. This bothers me as an old fart. Okay. Not that I got into tech way back when, but I know when I first.
But you did fart way back when.
I mean, when you got to go, you got to go. Don't squeeze the Charmin. But back when I graduated high school and was looking at, you know, the potential of community college, but we won't get into that because, you know, we couldn't afford that. But anyway, there was not AI. There was not the run your papers through a site to make sure you didn't plagiarize. You know, you actually had to learn the shit that you were going to school for. Now, and Foamboy and I were recently talking about it with the internship that I have, pretty sure that the task set before us by this person is going to be handed to AI by the two mouth breathers who are in my class, because it's just easier that way. And the problem is that AI has upended the way that students, you know, read, learn, and write. And that's a problem, because
God forbid that the process of learning focus on, I don't know, things like critical thinking skills instead of rote memorization and regurgitation.
But they don't want that, Sir Bemrose, as you know. Okay. Yeah, they want a bunch of cookie cutter
they want
idiots
a bunch
who
of
just
people
know
that,
how to push buttons and follow orders.
Yeah, what you're saying is what they want is people who can be replaced with AI. So why the hell should you not use AI to get the stupid credentials?
I agree with that.
Well, yeah. It's, of course they want stupid people, stupid people.
I'm just saying that, you know, there was a time when learning actually meant being able to develop your brain and not, you know, being fed into the Prussian model to stamp out good little factory workers, which are totally being automated away at this point.
Well, I think I want to read this directly from the
except for Cotton Gin, who isn't being automated because he's a terrible factory worker. But I didn't say that out loud.
No, he's just been vibe coded. That's why he's so good at what he does. Till you have to debug him and then you're fucked. So Michael Clune, a literary professor and novelist, said that already many students have been left incapable of reading and analyzing, synthesizing data, all kinds of skills. In a recent essay, he warned that colleges and universities rushing to embrace the technology were preparing to self-lobotomize. I think that's a fantastic statement. Now, the Ohio University, where he teaches, has begun requiring every freshman to take a class in generative AI and pitched itself as the first, quote, AI-fluent university, pledging to embed AI across every major. So stay the fuck away from the Ohio State University, because what they're going to be pumping out is a bunch of mindless zombies who don't know how to do shit except for punch keys and drool.
It sounds like their faculty room is already full of that.
Well, yes, of course.
It would seem.
Well, you know, okay, so as somebody who...
Or at least the dean's office.
Yeah. You know, and actually, as somebody who has learned, who has, you know, who has written a lot, right? I mean, not, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I've done, you know, I do it as part of my day job. I do it. I've, you know, published a couple of books, that kind of thing. And part of... Yeah, part of learning is actually like writing it, you know, taking the idea and actually putting it on paper and you know, putting it in and, you know, having to struggle to put it into words and all of that. And you actually get pretty smart when you do shit like that, right? So actually struggling
what you just described is a form of data translation from one form to another, which requires assimilating the knowledge, comprehending it, and then emitting it in another form, which is a fantastic way to learn things.
Well, it's also, you know, you need to make sure you don't lose something in translation either, which, you know, does happen from time to time. But when
that's part of comprehending.
Exactly, right? And this is what I've been doing. You know, I've been doing this my entire life, you know.
That's one of the things that a lot of people don't realize about AI is when you had to take information from one place, crunch it in your head, and put it in another place, some of it stays in your head, and therefore you now understand that information. Whereas if you take it from point A, you feed it into an AI, and you say, give me something that can go to point B, it never went through your brain, so of course you don't have any idea what you just created. That's why people turn in essays that they can't quote from and don't even recognize as their own, because it never entered their brain.
Exactly, because the LLM did it for them. That's exactly what we're arguing against, or at least I'm arguing against as a student, because I refuse to learn to use a tool I have no interest in using, because I'd like to use that tool that I was born with that sits inside my cranium. Why that is so difficult in this day and age to understand that I don't want a machine to do the simple tasks for me. It's the simple tasks that you build upon that you have a solid foundation on which to, you know, do things. When you don't build that foundation, you're fucked.
I mean, you're basically nailing the computing idea that I have had for a very long time and have been called a Luddite for a good chunk of my career because of this. And that is, I don't trust evil wizards. And this was in the context of Microsoft installers, which was, you know, they decided to call things that, you know, programs that or scripts that just do everything for you and hide all the details was in Microsoft parlance was a wizard. And I came up with the idea long, long time ago that I will use a script or a wizard only if I understand it well enough to be able to do the whole thing myself. The only, you know, if you are using a time-saving device or a fully automated system, if you are using an automated system to save time to do something that you understand and can do, that's righteous. But if you're using it to avoid understanding it, then you are not only cheating yourself, but you're also building engineering debt.
Yeah, and we know what happens with organizations that have engineering debt. It accumulates and. Yeah, and then you're running something. You're running end of life software for 10 years.
Yeah, so I've enjoyed a whole lot of friction from people who are like, "Oh, just run the script." I'm like, "I'm gonna read the script and figure out what the fuck it's doing first." And people don't like that because, well, in the corporate world, it takes time. But I tell you what, when the script fucked up, I was the only one able to recover.
Well, yeah, because you knew what it was doing. Well, I mean, why wouldn't you?
So anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was I was not ignoring you guys. I was truly scanning the rest of my article that I had pulled. I mean, this just, it's dark, you guys. Like 50 mil spent by more than a dozen universities partnering with OpenAI that will, quote, accelerate research progress and catalyze a new generation of institutions equipped to harness the transformative power of AI. Are you kidding me?
I mean, of course I'm saddened and disgusted, but I'm not surprised in any way.
Well, no, and the plan...
I cannot wait for this bubble to break, to burst.
Me either. I'm standing here with a giant pin just waiting. You know, these plans are lofty, but they offer little guidance on what professors are supposed to do with students who can't read more than a couple paragraphs at a time or who turn in essays generated in seconds by a machine. You know, you leave these fucking people to their own devices. And this is what makes me laugh is that there's literally a guy who I'm trying to. Oh, here we go. This quote got me. And tell me if you guys agree or disagree upon this. Okay. He says, let's see. Carl Steele, an English professor at Brooklyn College, said that AI has helped make students' preparation or presentations richer and more interesting, but that while they may use it to prepare...
Interesting, that's not the word I would use.
Yeah, me either. I've seen what AI produces. It's slop. But that he has them speak from minimal notes and stand in front of a photo of a text they annotated by hand. He also assigns written responses to text only after the class has discussed them. Now, this is the part I wanted to get to. And I quote, I suppose they could use their phones to record the conversation, feed a transcript into a chatbot, and produce a paper that way, he said. But that's more trouble, I think, than most students would take. Really? You think that's more? Let's just take for a second.
I mean,
how much effort does it take
until
to
someone
have a
writes...
recorder that you feed the file into your computer, feed that into the LLM, it produce 30 minutes? How long is research alone is going to take more than 30 minutes on that paper? This guy's
He's got a little bit of a point, though, because the vast majority, you know, there's always the one or two student who's going to come up with that idea and figure out how to do it. But the vast majority of them wouldn't even know how to do that until someone writes an app for them.
I mean, you're not wrong.
My question, though, you said something about, you know, the... creating an essay in seconds, and my thought was, what kind of GPU does this guy have? How many tokens is he spending? Seconds?
Well, I mean, obviously it was probably an over-exaggeration. But it doesn't negate the fact that what is being pumped out of, and I'll say it, universities. I'm not even going to say shitty little community colleges like I'm attending. These $85,000 a year universities are pumping out mindless zombies who know how to do very few things. They know how to click buttons and, you know, sign into apps, and that's about it.
Well, the good news is that those are the people who are competing for your job.
Yeah, well, them and the AIs that they are so intravenously hooked to.
The only problem is that those are also the people who are interviewing you, so they can't tell the difference.
The fact that an AI is doing most of the weeding out of basically everything from candidates.
I think some of these AIs would be a lot more reliable if they were doing weed.
Probably not wrong. But I know I don't have to ask the question, why are we relying on machines again to do the tasks that seem menial, but it's kind of important if you're just, as I've said, I use the GPS example. If you just blindly follow your GPS, you're going off a fucking cliff or down a one-way street that ends with no way to turn around.
Or down a boat ramp, which was what the first version of Apple Maps used to do to people.
There is that as well. Okay. But if you blindly follow an electronic, which is basically what you're doing when you're assigning it the task of, oh, weed out these candidates or, you know, decide what courses that we can cut from the curriculum for whatever reason. When you're not having a human brain who has reasoning, which is something an AI does not have, when you're, you get what you deserve in that instance. And that's why, like you said, cannot wait for this bubble to burst. Big pin just poking at the air.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So are we done with that story? Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I will let you now go because I know you guys brought a lot more than I did, and I'm okay with that because, you know, that's why I'm only half a Ben.
Oh, I'm not even halfway through my notes, but I don't think I'm going to get there because we don't need to.
Oh, but we do.
How about this one? Wearing a cloud-enabled camera is a privacy issue. Also, water is wet.
I was going to say, did you get wet?
Yeah, film at 11.
Yeah, yes, as a matter of fact. The question is whether or not you get access to that film or just the company.
God damn it, I have a premium subscription. Don't fucking tell me that.
This has to do with the AI smart glasses that came out of... The article uses the word Meta over and over again. Which
are we talking about those fucking Ray-Bans they came out with?
Yes. And I still refuse to refer to the company as Meta, but it's going to creep in because so much of this story used the word Meta over and over again. It's fucking Facebook. Feces book, if you prefer. But anyway. There was a... Okay. Let's go ahead and drop the link. A story by the original link I found this actually I found it on Yahoo News, but if you trace back you find I ended up at TechCrunch, who at least linked to the original, but none of the American tech blogs was willing to tell the name of this company, which I found annoying. But then I looked up the name and I'm not sure that I can pronounce it either.
Pause for a second, if we may. I'm looking at the link you dropped in the chat with the title Meta Sued Over AI Smart Glasses Privacy Concerns After Workers Reviewed Nudity, Sex, and Other Footage. You're telling me that
we're getting there, yes.
That some mouth-breathing dipshit is wearing his glasses while he's railing his girlfriend.
We're getting there.
Oh my God.
So Svenska or something, it was a newspaper out of Sweden who... I'm not going to try to pronounce the name because I'm not going to be able to get it right. So just like TechCrunch said, a Swedish newspaper did an actual investigation on these glasses and found that workers at a Kenya-based subcontractor were reviewing footage from the customer's glasses. The company is called Sama. They are in Kenya for anonymous reasons. They... And because the people who run the company will actually get seriously penalized by Facebook if they're found out, they didn't give a lot of information, but they did interview several of the workers at this company. So for the record, what this company actually is they are quote unquote data annotators for the AI. This is in the context where we always joke that AI stands for actually Indians. Because, right. You know, there's people in the third world. Well, they're not India. They're not from India anymore. They're from Kenya. These are people who they basically have an entire call center full of people who get paid way, way less than what would be minimum wage in America to stare at a video and draw boxes around flower pots, traffic signs, cars. They are the ones who are training this AI saying, you know, this is a traffic light. This, you know, click every picture with a president in it. And, you know, you don't look for anything with Biden. That's what these people are doing. That's their job. They sit here and look at images that the AI is supposedly analyzing. And they are the actual brain behind it, because it turns out that the AI can't do everything that the Silicon Valley evangelists say it can. But
say it isn't so.
In the interview, I'm just going to pull some quotes out of the article. These are quotes from the workers in Kenya as interviewed by the Swedish newspaper. In some videos, you can see someone going to the toilet or getting undressed. I don't think they know, because if they knew, they wouldn't be recording. I saw a video where a man puts his glasses on the bedside table and leaves the room. Shortly afterward, his wife comes in and changes her clothes. Someone may have been walking around with the glasses or happened to be wearing them, and then the person's partner was in the bathroom and they just came out naked. We see everything, from living rooms to naked bodies. Meta has that type of content in its databases. People can record themselves in the wrong way and not even know that they are recording. They are real people like you and me. Then the workers describe videos where people, for example, people's bank cards are visible by mistake, or videos of people looking at a computer screen and entering passwords, people watching porn while wearing the glasses.
Well, that's the perk of the job.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you have to watch these things, I don't know. I don't know if I don't think I could. I don't think I could. I mean, I would want to try, and then after a few hours, I'd be like, nope. This.
After a few hours.
Especially considering that the average American is not actually someone I want to see naked these days.
No.
But, they say that these are clips that could trigger enormous scandals if they were leaked.
Not to mention, that is a massive violation of, so many laws.
You don't say.
Around cyber.
Yeah. Now, in their pamphlets or whatever they use, Facebook claimed that it was blurring faces in images and any sensitive data was being blurred. And this is a quote from the article, but sources disputed that this blurring consistently worked. Now, there's another red flag there. Sources. Okay. Sources is a key word in mainstream media that says we just made this shit up. But maybe they have sources. I don't know. Either way, in response to the article and the allegations, the UK regulator immediately opened an investigation. That's what UK regulators do. You have someone called a regulator, so their job is to pester companies and regulate. Okay, whatever. But there was also a lawsuit filed in the United States by some lawyer whose name was mentioned prominently in every single article, and I got annoyed with that kind of hubris, so I did not write her name down. But Facebook is now facing an article for false advertising and breach of contract because they advertised the product saying it was, quote, designed by or for privacy and controlled by you, and both of those statements are a lie. Now, Facebook might be covered here because in their terms of service, quote, in some cases, Meta will review your interaction with AIs, including the content of your conversation with or conversations with or messages to AIs, and this review may be automated or manual by human. In other words, they say they're doing it in their terms of service, not in their marketing, but everybody knows that marketing is all lies. Nobody reads the terms of service. This was probably somewhere around line 83,000 of their terms of service.
They should get the AI to read the terms of service for them.
And the last thing I found while poking around on here was there was a link to an app called Nearby Glasses, which is an app that just simply tells you when someone with AI smart glasses is nearby, puts up an alert on your phone so that you can ask them to turn it off.
Well,
my God.
The method that they use, by the way, I actually really liked. What it does is you're vaguely aware that every device that uses Bluetooth has a manufacturer ID attached to that is broadcast with the signal.
Yes.
Well, it just listens for any Bluetooth signals, and if it finds one with the device ID, manufacturer ID of Facebook, it pops up a notification. Meta or Snap, which is, I guess, two different device IDs. But that's all it does, is it scans the manufacturer IDs of every Bluetooth signal it can detect, and if it encounters one from Facebook, it pops up a notification that says, hey, some glass hole is nearby.
Okay, glass hole is definitely a show title.
Yeah, that's an old term.
That the first time I heard that term was when Google was coming up with Google Glass and said it was going to change everything. This was about 2012.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, glass hole. Yeah, it's just a new kind of glass hole.
But it's the same thing. So, I mean, the term works.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a question, Sir Bemrose. Have you heard by chance of this new Wi-Fi 6 they're talking about?
I've heard of it, and I think I even looked it up.
They're moving on to Wi-Fi 7.
Yeah.
No, and I think I know where, but
there's a reason I'm asking, despite Phoneboy's rudeness of walking all over your answer. My son was talking about how supposedly if you have a smart home, which first of all, if you have a smart home, you're a fucking idiot, but digress.
Well, people use smart homes to make up for their lack of smarts.
Well, okay, fair. But if you have a finger quotes smart home, and you have Wi-Fi 6 in this smart home, it can supposedly track you. Like, if you go and adjust the thermostat, it tracks that and knows that you're at this control panel. And that, like, it's fucking creepy. It's a very massive invasion of privacy, if indeed this is true.
So, I don't know anything about this story, but let me go ahead and give you a very quick synopsis of a story I did on Angry Tech News probably 3 years ago, which at the time was a proof of concept, but I would be entirely unsurprised if it's a product by now. And that was if you have at least 2 points in your house, Wi-Fi access points, then the proof of concept was that they could detect the interference in the Wi-Fi waves to build a spatial structure of everything in your house that is capable of blocking Wi-Fi. And in particular, checking that over time, you can track the movement of anything in your house that's capable of blocking Wi-Fi. And one of the things that moves around your house that is capable of blocking Wi-Fi is a large sack of slightly salty water inside of skin called a person. So the proof of concept was literally using 2 access points at one end, at either end of a house, to track where people are walking around in their house just by the broadcast signal that's already being broadcast from your Wi-Fi access point.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, which, you know, because, yeah, and if you have one of those, you know, multi-thing systems, yeah, they can do that. And, yeah, and that's, you know, in order to cover this place, you kind of do need one of those things. But, yeah, unfortunately, yeah, that's it's part of the same system. Yeah, it could. If somebody gets access to your Wi-Fi, yeah.
You mean like if say, your router still has its default password and somebody is, while they're busy installing the botnet on it, they can go ahead and push this firmware that now tracks everywhere you walk in your house. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, because we know we know the security of these routers is, you know, is oh so great.
Full of Chinesium.
Yeah, as always. Okay, so I have one more story.
Okay.
And
I have 4 left. They're all somewhat related, but it's going to be like 20 minutes of solid talking. So
that's okay. You can be the grand finale.
Yes. So so Amazon orders a 90-day reset after code mishaps caused millions of lost orders. And I think we actually ran into this.
Was this from the other day when I said I think Amazon is down because it keeps asking me to sign into my fucking account?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Dave.
Now imagine, by the way, you're in a van full of packages and that happens on your device.
Oh, hell no.
Yes. So Dave Treadwell, Amazon's SVP of e-commerce services, told staff on Tuesday that a trend of incidents emerged since the third quarter of 2025, including several major incidents in the last few weeks, according to an internal document obtained by Business Insider. And at least one of those disruptions was tied to Amazon's AI coding assistant Q, while others exposed deeper issues among internal and other internal document explained. Programs included what he described as a high blast radius changes, where software updates and propagated broadly because control planes lacked lacks suitable safeguards, and a control plane guides how data flows across a computer network. Now, in other cases, data corruption took hours to unwind. Some failures were traced back to basic mechanisms, such as a requirement to have two people authorize code changes that were either lacking or bypassed. So, yeah. So, you know, this is bad process by Amazon that caused it to go down and lose things, and you know that they're supposedly going to develop other safeguards. You know,
in other news, there's gambling going on here.
Well, exactly. I mean, of course, this is what you're trusting this company that clearly doesn't understand best practices when rolling this shit out, and we're supposed to trust them, right?
No. I don't. There's never been a time that I've trusted that company.
Yeah, well, yeah.
No. The bigger they are, the less trust they deserve. That rule of thumb.
Yeah, I mean, that generally, I think there's something to be said about that, you know? I mean, seriously. But, yeah, that story doesn't
Because the bigger they are, the less incentive they have to give a fuck what you have to say or how much it would hurt you for them to implement some policy.
Well, exactly, because it's they don't care, they don't have to. I mean, that's truly what that is about. So, all right,
that's exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to put it in the thing because it's kind of it's almost a water is wet category. RAM now represents 35% of bill of materials for HP personal computers. Are we surprised by this? No, we're not.
No. RAM prices are so insanely inflated, same as GPU prices, because of the data center bubble.
Yes. You mean the AI bubble? Yeah.
In fact, it'll be a really good time to upgrade when the AI bubble pops. The only thing I don't know is in 1996, I predicted that advertising on the web was a fad that was going to pop, and I still stand by that prediction. I was just a little bit off on the timing.
Yeah, it might be. You know, I mean, yeah. Trust. I mean, I made money.
By at least 3 decades.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. I mean, eventually the prediction comes true, right? I mean, so of course, they could replace the internet with something stranger, I suppose, but. Okay, so you say you have 4 more stories. Go for it.
Yeah, but I think I should push them off till next week.
Oh, well,
we are not doing Ben's.
Yeah,
next
we can't.
Week.
We can't do. Yeah, not doing Ben's next week because.
Oh, I see how it is.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Wait, what does he mean? I see. No. No.
Yeah, we're just. It's not that. But the next time, in 2 weeks. Yeah, I guess we
okay. Oh, you know what? This isn't going to wait 2 weeks. It probably would. I just don't feel like it.
Okay.
Okay. Let's start with. Why? Oh, fuck you, Linux. Oh no, my window manager just crashed, so I couldn't scroll my text editor.
Oh jeez.
It does that. It's a thing that Wayland does.
The
only good thing about it is that it doesn't take the system out and it comes right back up on its own. So, I mean, what do you do?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So you're probably aware that most social media does not allow people under 13 years of age. That has to do with a law called COPPA from 2000.
Yep.
It is a massive regulatory imposition for anybody who is under 13 years old. Any social media company requires parental permission for any data collected, which includes creating an account. Most social media says, nah, they're trying to restrict what we collect. That's tough. So we'll just say you have to be 13. However, under 13 people are still a deep pool of tasty, tasty data to social media companies like Facebook. So WhatsApp is creating parent-managed accounts for preteens. Parents, according to these, or the way these accounts are purportedly work, according to Facebook's press release, parents decide which groups kids can join in WhatsApp. The accounts can only use messaging and calling. What they can't use are things I would never want to anyway. AI channels, status, location sharing are not available to child accounts under 13 for this. The accounts can only communicate with groups that they have already joined. They can only initiate messages with people who are already in the context. In order to join another group or add a contact, you need a PIN set up by the parent. So to set this whole thing up, you have to have two phone apps at the same time, two different phones. One is the parent and one is the child, because of course you need phones. It's WhatsApp. They couldn't, Facebook's SDK can't collect nearly enough data from a sandbox browser window. God forbid you even try to do it in private mode or something.
Well, actually, you can actually run WhatsApp on a web browser, although I think it has to be paired to a phone. But
I can tell you from experience, because my company does almost all of their communication via WhatsApp, and I still don't have an account. You cannot create an account without installing the app on a phone and then using that phone's phone number as the unique identifier, your user ID.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because it's tied to the phone number.
So I have told them over and over again, I said, I am absolutely willing to use the web browser, but I can't create an account via the web. I can't install the app on my personal phone. I say can't. There's no fucking way I would even remotely try. But I also know having uninstalled Google Play from my phone, like Play Services, it wouldn't run.
No, probably not.
And I've already told them, I said, tell you what, you give me, the company has 200 phones because you need them to do the work. And I said, give me a phone to create an account on, and I will use the web from then on. And nobody wants to do that, so fuck them.
That's right, yeah.
But I'm also kind of a pariah for a number of reasons there, because, oh, you're the one who doesn't have WhatsApp. Yep, that's goddamn right I don't. But anyway, to set this up, you need two phones. The parent must register and verify the child's phone number, confirm the child's age, which I guess is just an attestation, scan a QR code on the child's device to link the two accounts, and then the parent sets a 6-digit PIN that must be entered on the child's phone to join groups, et cetera, et cetera. The parent is also notified when someone not in the contacts initiates communication. The child account then can transition to a normal WhatsApp account once the user turns 13, which really means once the date of birth you handed them turns 13. But so a couple things jumped out at me. The first and absolutely most obvious one, and I think this has probably occurred to almost everyone here, is people under 13 should not be on social media, fucking period, full stop.
You're not wrong.
Outside of that, there's always the question of, who verifies that the information is correct? There's some crazy restrictions on this. Suppose you are the kind of person who desperately wants to connect your kid to WhatsApp. Are you going to use this at all, or are you just going to give them an account? The problem with every child account in any system is that the first thing that you have to do in creating the account is you have to tell them how old you are. And unless you're fucking stupid, you tell them you're over 18, because otherwise they restrict the shit out of you.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I don't know. Let me go back to my previous point, though. People under 13 should not be on social media. Full stop.
Yeah. No, they probably shouldn't have a smartphone either, but
I am absolutely with that too.
Yeah. Which,
okay.
I literally had this argument / conversation with my own children as to why I was not okay with them having a smartphone in high school back in like circa 2000 mid.
I had graduated college before I got a cell phone at all. I mean, smartphones hadn't been invented. Yes, I'm a boomer, but
they were invented. They were just not available in the United States. The Nokia had them, I can assure you.
Actually, I had a Nokia for my first phone in 2001, but yeah.
Yeah, they weren't smartphones in the US, I can assure you.
I at one point had that N97, which was that awesome brick of a phone. You know, like everybody knows that, like, if you accidentally drop your iPhone onto a desk and it drops 4 inches, the phone is broken and the screen is now permanently shattered because it costs three times the cost of the phone to replace the screen. Well, I had one of those Nokia candy bar phones that if you did the same thing, you dropped it from 4 inches, you broke the desk.
Yeah, they were built like, yeah, the N97. Yeah, I probably had one of those at one time. I you know,
those were awesome.
Yes. I still had my European N95, which was, well, yeah, I did. And it's one of the things I left, and, you know, yeah. And unfortunately, you can't connect it to modern networks anymore because there's no 2G anymore. And it probably even the Wi-Fi is too old at this point. And, you know, all the, it won't be able to validate SHA-256 certificates or anything like that. I mean, it's probably,
I did a little dance when the analog cell network got shut down and I realized that my car suddenly became impossible to track because that was the method that they used.
Well, yeah, especially now they're putting in all the remote kill switches in cars now. It's like,
yeah,
that there's a reason that people are wanting to buy 20 plus year old cars.
Okay. So slightly related, and this one was absolutely some pretty big news, and I probably should have brought it at the beginning of the show, but you know what? Screw everybody who tuned out for all of the boring stories. This one is about California Assembly Bill 1043, also known as the Operating System Age Verification Law. This law was passed in November in California. It was signed by Newsom in December. And it goes into effect January 1st of 2027. As a matter of fact, it passed unanimously 76-0 in the California Assembly and 38-0 in the California Senate, which means if you know anybody in the California Assembly or, you know, in the California government, Republican or Democrat, that's a fake distinction because everybody knows there are no Republicans left in California. But if you find somebody who is a legislator in California, punch them in the face because this was a terrible fucking law and they all voted for it. Okay. What this law does is it requires every operating system provider to collect age information from users at account setup time and then to broadcast that data to app developers through a real-time API. That is the quote from the bill. The operating system, every operating system, and they don't make any distinction between mobile, desktop, console, whatever, everything that has an operating system. This includes Windows, Apple, iPhone, iOS, Mac OS. It will, in fact, apply to Linux in California. It'll apply to Steam Deck. It'll apply to Xbox and PlayStation. In every case, when you create an account, the operating system must sort the user into one of four age brackets, under 13, 13 to 15, 16 to 17, or 18 and above. That must be quote unquote verified on account creation. They don't say how it's verified, but they do say that it's more than just you attest to it. So I don't know if, you know, there's a lot of places that now demand a driver's license or something. I don't know how you do that with a 13-year-old, but, then that information must be reported by a well-understood API to any app, and they talk about apps. Now, I don't know where I come from. I run a desktop operating system. I run programs, but, you know, they say apps. Any program that asks for it, they can call the API and get this information. There is no mechanism whatsoever for the user to consent to this disclosure. It's just if a program runs and requests the API, then that age is reported to the program. Under the law, developers who receive this signal via the API, quote, are deemed to have actual knowledge of their user's age. The law, in fact, makes developers of software liable for anything that might happen if you give something to a child that they weren't supposed to have. It says up to $2,500 per child for negligent violations, three times that for intentional violations. I'm not sure violations of what, but I'm guessing it ties into, you know, whatever various laws they have that says, you know, kids aren't allowed to, I don't know, the only, there's probably things that they don't think kids should do, like, you know, go through puberty or something. Anyway, Assemblymember Buffy Wicks, who is the author of the bill, says that, quote, "It avoids constitutional concerns by focusing strictly on age assurance and not content moderation." Although Reclaim the Net point out that the entire point of collecting age signals and broadcasting them to every app developer is to enable those developers to restrict what people can see based on their age. And therefore, the infrastructure built by AB 1043 has no purpose other than content moderation. So it's not really clear where this moron Buffy Wicks is coming from, other than she thinks she found a loophole, I guess. Now, this law is unconstitutional as fuck, but in the time that it's going to take the courts to finally strike it down, a whole lot of damage can be done because, you know, these big Silicon Valley operating system vendors are going to fall all over themselves to put all kinds of these restrictions in there.
But this is also data I don't necessarily want to put on my own fucking computer. Why would I?
There is absolutely no way. I'm straight up never going to run an operating system that has this at all. Period. End of story. Now the last point that Reclaim the Net pointed out was that there are some distributions of Linux, for example, like Arch, Debian, and Gentoo, which have no centralized account infrastructure by design. So it's not clear who or how this is going to be enforced in any way. With a lot of Linux distributions, users download ISOs from mirrors, modify source code freely, and run systems that report to nobody. Those are the systems that I want to run, because you can be damn sure we're going to be seeing operating systems that have this immediately. It, like I said, unconstitutional as fuck, but it's going to happen.
None of this is good.
No, none of this is good. So I have yet another story. And this one I actually particularly liked, but now we're getting into the ones where I didn't have time to prepare notes. So I'm just going to read you from the story. There we are. This one in particular, this Midnight BSD, which is one of many small distros. This is, trust me, this is the first of many to make this announcement, but this person came out, and I'm happy that someone did, that said, we're not going to be doing this. And more importantly, put a notice into their README, and as a big pop-up while installing, the pop-up says, "The compilation of software known as Midnight BSD is distributed under the following terms. Residents of any countries, states, or territories that require age verification for operating systems are not authorized to use Midnight BSD. This list currently includes Brazil, effective March 17, 2026, California, effective January 2027, and will include Colorado, Illinois, and New York, provided they pass their currently proposed legislation. We urge users to write their representatives to get these laws repealed or replaced." And good on you, because this is unconscionable no matter which way you cut it. And putting into your terms of service that said, yeah, I'm making an operating system, and if you're subject to these idiotic laws, then you can't use my operating system. Go fuck off. Go install Ubuntu, who, by the way, happened to be falling all over themselves to implement this API right now.
Well, yeah, exactly. Which is, this none of this is good. This is not even a Linux distro. This is a BSD distro,
which is Linux. Fuck you. Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there's a nerd going.
I don't there, make well, the distinction.
Actually,
you
know. and that nerd I don't make would be the distinction.
From where I'm sitting, Linux is any desktop operating system that isn't made by Apple or Microsoft. So you know what? Fight me.
I mean, yeah, it's anything other, but okay. So my question is, you got one, you said you had four, so now there's three. So what's your last one?
Oh, someone was counting. Okay. This is another one that I didn't come anywhere near, fully investigating or, but, it was juicy. So let me just go ahead and, this one is an archive.org because the original post has already been deleted by Reddit. And, it came out this morning.
Oh my.
Now, what this post is there was a user who noticed that a lot of states are, starting to really, God damn it. Now I'm losing my tabs. There are a lot of states out there who are somehow simultaneously starting to consider and, you know, seriously think about passing these age verification in operating system laws. And, so this person, this particular Reddit user, okay, Lingonberry, decided to do an investigation by pulling public records to find out who is lobbying via mainly IRS 990 filings. And there's actually a crap ton of data that so I'm going to drop that archive.org, and I'm also going to drop after Reddit deleted his post, he put up a GitHub. Now, GitHub being Microsoft, I don't know how long that will be up, but it actually has all of his data. So you can comb through, but because we're short on time, I'm going to drop really quickly the bottom line. Pouring through all these IRS 990 filings and trying to figure out where the lobbying money is coming from to somehow be pushing simultaneous operating system age verification laws in all of these states. And what he came up with is it all comes down to, wait, who's the big villain in almost every fucking story I've been doing today?
Bill Gates.
Facebook.
Oh, Facebook, yes.
Facebook.
It all comes down to lobbying agencies that are operated or funded by Facebook. Now, he did a pretty good job of outlining the data, and it looked plausible. I did not have time to verify any of this, which is why I'm going to just drop his, the GitHub has his links to raw data. So please, if you're concerned about this, go ahead and look at it yourself. You know, I'm always right, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't verify me. But it's plausible. It makes sense. Let's see. Of all of these huge Silicon Valley companies, which one is not going to be impacted by new restrictions on operating systems? Oh, it would be the one who does all of their revenue by data collection and doesn't make an operating system. Because what is the idea of forcing age verification in here? Well, it's a transparent data collection ploy. We know that. We know what this is. This is, you know, forcing people to attest to their age and putting that into the operating system for any software that comes by to collect is a fucking data goldmine about people's age, about people's... And
well, even the
by
fact
the way,
that they're using the fucking computer. Now you're telling some third party that is going to verify my fucking age that I'm using a fucking computer. Why is it any of their fucking business?
Oh, it's not. We know this. But Facebook wants to collect that data. And, you know, there was a, I don't remember which of these stories it was, but there was some busybody who was coming out and saying, well, this data is not very useful because it only gives age categories and doesn't actually tell what people's exact age is. So you can't use it to fingerprint people. And to that, all I would say is, well, you got software. Your software calls the API every day for 2 years. One of those days, the age category is going to change. Oh, look! Now we know what their birth date is.
Exactly. They are so stupid.
This is frightening and fucking awful. And if you have any chance of influencing any of your elected representatives, I am not going to say definitively that Facebook is behind it, but it is pretty obvious by it all coming up at once that this is a coordinated move to try to force data collection into operating systems across the board. And California is, their entire legislature is full of absolute woke morons who, of course, they looked at it. They never saw a privacy or rights violation they didn't want to commit. But if it's just California, I am totally willing to jump on using any operating system that explicitly says, you know, fuck California. You people are not allowed because you can't vote in anybody with half a fucking brain. Sorry.
I like that.
Yeah. I am waiting for when do I get to vote on the federal referendum that says, you know what? 50 states was pretty good. That was a nice local peak. Let's go down to 49 because California, in fact, let's go to like 48 or 47 because, you know, California and New York, we got a bunch of states that are just fucking dragging the entire nation down. Can we jettison them? Now, my problem, of course, is I live in one of those, but I would try to get out first.
Well, yes. I wrote down "Fuck California" as a show title, just because, you know.
Show title? That's a theme song.
Yeah, well, that's exactly. That's something we.
And we will be playing it in the afterbirth.
Yes, exactly. So, all right.
So, like I said, my last four. This was where I dipped a little into politics. But what's really happening is that politics is shitting all over my tech. These last stories were all related, and I hate them all.
Okay. Well. That's what we do here. We cover stories that we hate sometimes because tech stories are dumb because they're written by they're often written in woke publications and highlight the woke shit that's going on in the world because these tech companies like to fap all over the woke shit and try to maintain the narrative, and you just kind of and it's just dumb and that's what we do here on Two and a Half Bens. We talk about stuff that
we highlight the stupid.
We highlight the stupid
in tech anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I think we've actually got to the end of this. So did we get to the
have
end?
Have we?
Yeah, we have. I think it's
2.5 hours later.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
was that bitching?
An hour per Ben.
An hour per Ben.
That's fair.
An hour per Ben. Okay. I think how do we end these things? I think we usually end it like this.
Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?